Life Management Science Labs would like to acknowledge that we live and produce this podcast on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. We'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of our listeners and our international colleagues. We'd like to pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bouncing Back, the Personal Resilience Science Insights podcast produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. We are champions of life management science, providing structured insights informed by science and inspired by practice on key aspects of conscious living. Each week, we bring you scientific and practical insights on each element with the expert knowledge of professionals in the field. I am your host, Joanna. Let's get started. Hello, everyone. My name is Joanna, and welcome back to Bouncing Back, our personal resilience podcast. So today we're going to be chatting about building resilience through pro-social acts. And joining me today to help me do that is Dr. Fujian Zain. So Dr. Fujian is an international speaker, author, psychotherapist, life and executive coach. She also holds a doctorate in clinical psychology, and she's also the originator of the awareness integration psychological and educational model, which we'll get into more today. But hi, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Of course, it's a joy.
Great. So before we get started, I'd love if you could tell us a bit more about yourself and what you do.
Of course. I've been a psychotherapist and a coach, business and life, for about over 30 years. And I also teach in different universities, California State University, Long Beach, and actually a university in Paris. About the model. So I'm excited. I write and I research a lot with different people across the country and across the globe, actually, in different countries, going through and looking at how the awareness integration theory has been useful and how it has enhanced people's life. And we also have an app, which is called Fujian. And it takes that type of the model and the theory and goes across like 30 different areas of life. So been very busy and very excited about, taking the model in across the globe and have people have the opportunity to create a fulfilling life for themselves and really enjoy the resilience that they do have, that every single person has. So I'm glad for us to be able to talk about resiliency.
Yeah, definitely. And can you tell me a bit more about awareness integration?
Of course. It is an accumulation, kind of bringing the best of the theories and the models, interventions that have been there for all these years in psychotherapy world and in the personal growth and coaching world. And so taking the cognitive models, the emotional, the psychosomatic, trauma-informed, mindfulness, hypnotic, and all of those together. And it's like whenever I learned at any point and I got trained, I brought it into my sessions with my clients. And, the best of them kind of got together and created like a formula, like a structure that if you just do this first and then do this next and then do that, it kind of gave a lot more efficiency and worked well. And it worked very deep in a brief time. And so it was showing up that we were reducing depression about 76%. We were reducing anxiety about 65%. And we were raising self-esteem, self-efficacy, and self-confidence very quickly with, between 10 sessions to 20 sessions. And none of those issues ever came back. So we're clearing the past, looking at the present moment, envisioning the tomorrow, the future, and moving forward. So as we started looking at this model from a psychotherapy angle, I wrote the book Life Reset, and we started teaching it in the university and saw as a self-help model, we were still finding about 65%, 64% minimization of depression and anxiety without even having a coach or a therapist. So it was exciting to see that that's how the research was showing. So from there, we developed the app so people can also work through the model on their own. And if they do need a psychotherapist or a coach, then I'm training them across the globe so that they have the opportunity to work deeper if they really want it to be with someone or someone mirroring them. And so it's an accumulation that takes cognitive, emotional, psychosomatic, the past, the future, and the present moment all together and in every area of your life.
Wow, that sounds really like complex and like all encompassing as well. So I'm excited to break that down a bit more as we get into the topic today. But before that, we have a section we call Have You Met Dr. Fujian Zane? So here we just ask a few get to know you questions just so we can all get to know you better. So my first one for you is, what is your favorite book?
I read this book, which was called We Have Had Psychotherapy for About 100 Years and the World is Getting Worse. I know the title is funny and it's by Jay Haley. But what the book was Jay Haley was talking from a perspective of everything that happens to us as in our childhood kind of makes who we are in the future and as we grow up, right? It kind of builds our life. And the other author, which I forgot his name, he was coming, dialoguing from a place of, what if we have a destiny and everything that happens to us, it's getting us ready for the destiny that we have. And there was no right or wrong in this conversation. It was just a beautiful dialogue, you know, like a Socratic level of a dialogue between these two perspectives from one extreme to the other. But what it had for me, it's more like, what if it's both? You know, my brain kind of works at an encompassing level. What if it is true that, you know, we are natural at some things. We kind of come into the world and, you know, we have a temperament that we're better at some things naturally. We have a passion about some things naturally that we just kind of move forward with. And what if there is a part of us that kind of getting ready to have these experiences to naturally develop and co-create whatever it is that we're meant to be in life, because that's like the same way we have our uniqueness, that our uniqueness is coming to the world to get flourished in that way. And with that, there's also the concept of, you know, things that happen to us affect us the same way we look at genetics and epigenetics. So we come in to a certain parent with a particular genetics, and that becomes part of our destiny in a sense, but also our environments, experience we have, things that happen can break us or make us, and all of those also matter. So that's why the book was really deep for me as I read it.
Yeah, brilliant. And I love how deep you've like kind of jumped into it as well. I feel like we can learn so much from books, and I love self-help books especially, because for me sometimes they take a bit longer to read, but I feel like that's because you can just gain so much out of them and you can just learn so much from what's being said, and it takes that little bit extra time just to sort of soak it all in.
Very true. I love books. I read obviously a lot more books around psychological, societal, you know, concepts. But I agree with you that, you know, you take what the author says and take it in and really melt it into who you are.
Yeah, definitely. Well, moving on to my next question here is there a movie that you've recently enjoyed?
I actually just saw like 2 days ago the animation Wish. I don't know if you guys have seen it yet.
It's out in our cinemas, but I haven't seen it yet. No.
I love cartoons because it has multi-layer. But the Wish had this concept of, you know, the wish, wishing from your heart makes you alive. And it's as if, like, if you don't have a wish, if you don't have something that is out there that you're striving for, then it's like the light inside kind of goes away. And that's what we've seen also in working with depression. One of the angles of depression is that hopelessness about the future. Like you don't have a future to walk into to get flourished by, right? You just kind of live in the negative past and you suppose that whatever is there is just going to follow. So you don't wish it. Like I don't want what happened in the past to come in the future. So the concept of the wish being inside of you, glowing. And when a wish comes from your heart and your essence, and it doesn't just come from like a strategic concept, well, I should get this because it's better for me, blah, 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 but something that makes you glow. You know, that when that wish comes through, it's amazing. And usually those wishes are good for the whole humanity. You know, those are the ones that make you glow, the ones that are good for you and the betterment of all.
Yeah.
Those are the wishes that are so beautiful. So that movie just brought up a lot of that conversation back up for me.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's so beautiful. And I love when I feel like animated movies and like cartoons are especially underrated because there's a lot of meaning in them. And we often think that they are for kids because they're easy to watch and, you know, not a lot is being said. But clearly from the movie you've seen, there's a lot of hidden meaning, I guess.
Yes. And one of the reasons I really like the animated movies that are made for children, and you're right that they make it layered so that obviously grownups also get that. But it's one of those pieces where you get all of the archetypes that are supposed to be there. You'll get the villains, you know, you get all of those. But then somehow you always come out with this hope that the world is beautiful and it's going to be great.
Yeah.
You rarely see a children's movie that at the end says, you know, the world sucks and we shouldn't even go forward. So I think it's that hopefulness and showing that, yes, with all that happens in the world, there's a beauty that you could hope for.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. I love how your mind works already. It's so great to see how in depth you go into things. So that's been really great to hear.
Thank you.
Great. Well, my next one here is, are you listening to any podcasts at the moment or do you have one that you could recommend to us?
I have been listening to Sam Harris's podcast, and I think that I learn a lot. He does bring the best of people in different fields, and it's called Making Sense. Sam Harris is a neuroscientist and he's a philosopher. And the guests that he brings and the views that he has, it brings to people who I like to hear, which again, it's the encompassing concept of you look at reality of what happens, what people can do to each other, what human beings can do to themselves, the world, beings, animals, and all of it. But also kind of taking on of what works. If we're going to be together on this earth, what do we need to do in order to keep on going, being healthy and together, you know, so the collaborative aspect. So I truly recommend it.
Yeah. And what are some of the other topics that he talks about?
He brings people from all angle. Like we have the medical industry, you have the psychological, societal, you have politics, economics. So anyone who is out there who has done a lot of research in different type of fields, there's an in-depth conversation. And one of the things that I like about that is it's an in-depth conversation that he really gets into. He reads the books beforehand. He has challenges. And one of the things that I've learned from him is that even when he does not agree, and he's opposite completely of someone who he has brought, like maybe politically or ideologically, the profound respect in those ways of challenge and the way that they learn from each other is astonishing. And I learned a lot. And I love the concept that you can agree or you could disagree, but you could respect another human being and you could learn from all, you know, what shows up. And I think that's what's beautiful about it.
Yeah, definitely. I've always had this saying that everyone that comes into your life teaches you something about yourself. And it's something that I've sort of always stuck to because no matter who you're meeting, whoever you're coming across, whether they stay in your life for a long time or a short time, they always teach you something about yourself. And it's so true, especially when you listen to podcasts and you hear what people have to say, and you almost always come out of listening to that episode having learned something about, you know, the topic or yourself, which I find really interesting.
Yes. I also have a podcast. It's called A Heart First Chat with Dr. Fushan, which is every Monday I have the new episode come in, which is the same thing. I bring a lot of guests who are in the world of psychology, sociology, human, any person who has done any, you know, meaningful work in the science of human. And we do. We have about, you know, 40 minutes of conversation about them and what they found and their books. So that's another one I'm pitching in my own podcast to.
Brilliant. Well, I'm sure we'll make a note to check that one out. So thank you for that. And I've got one last little question here for you, which is, do you have a role model?
I think I have several role models from different perspectives. So yeah. from a woman's perspective, Oprah has been a great role model because she's come from a place of trauma in his childhood. And then she came from being a minority in a country that, you know, was not necessarily favorable or allowing success for women or being Black. And with a lot of love and integrity, she has created an amazing amount of success and care, more than anything, care with that success. With people that worked with her for public, for ideas. As a psychotherapist, I think, Irvin Yalom, who's still among us, has been an amazing role model to me because he, the way that he has been with the clients and the essence of seeing all angles of a human being and a level of love and acceptance and respect, and bringing that into his books. So any of your audience has, if you have ever read anything from Irvin Yalom, and if you haven't, please do. Please read all of his books. He brings the concept of relating in a room of two human beings together, and the deepest, lightest, and the darkest of what goes on in a human mind and heart, and he shares it in his books. And so he's been an amazing role model to me in the like, he's the one who, after I read his books, I really wanted to become a psychotherapist.
Amazing. And I find that it's so inspirational when there's someone you can look up to and also have access to all of their work, because they might be someone prominent and you can constantly have access to see how they got to where they are today. And I also find it really great when you can see someone who's risen from sort of adversity, like you talked about Oprah, and you can see how they've sort of done really well for themselves, and it gives you a lot of inspiration and motivation to be able to do the same for yourself.
Pretty much. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you so much for sharing those ones with us. I'd love to jump into our, you know, topic for today. So my first question for you is, why do you think resilience is important in our lives?
I think it's the muscles that pulls us through. It really is the muscle. It's when you think you can't handle things, when things are in front of you where you need to challenge yourself, and when you came out of an experience and you learned from it and you've taken what you've learned and put it to use. And that's where it's there. It's in I guess every fiber of our being. We could call it a survival. We need it for surviving, yes. But I think it's beyond just an innate survival concept. I think there's a beauty in not only an automatic
angle of survival, but a conscious level of living and surviving beyond, you know, just what happens for us automatically to survive. So I see tapping into our resilience, although it can come in automatically, but I think that what makes us have higher self-esteem and confidence and move forward is we also, when we own resilience, our own resilience, own it, take ownership of it, and not just kind of, you know, automatically move forward. So that's what I think about what resilience is and how it's important.
Yeah. And before, at the beginning of our conversation today, you said that everyone is capable of resilience. Would you be able to talk to me a bit more about that?
I mean, just imagine, you know, coming out of the womb canal, it's jumping to another world, and suddenly from a place of, you know, not having to do anything, everything is fed for you, and suddenly you have to communicate for feeding, and the world isn't going to do it exactly your way, and you have to figure out how to communicate, whether you're crying or you're smiling or whatever you're doing. Those, to me, are still part of the strategizing that we do consciously in order to live and survive the world, but live more than anything. And I think that when I say everyone has that, I think it's built in you. The power is built in you. And most people, you know, they have an experience, they learn from it, and they move forward. The part that I say it works when we own it, it's because when I'm conscious, when I'm aware of the skills I'm learning, then I can access them more freely and utilize them when necessary. But we all have that. We all have the capacity to learn from anything that shows up in front of us that is not the way we want it. And then we get surprised, and then we have to use our brain, our bodies, our emotions, our strategies in order to cope, cooperate, collaborate, to kind of like move along and get what we want. And I see all of that as part of the resilience that we have.
And do you think resilience stems from something bad or something negative or, you know, something adverse happening to us?
I don't know if I would call it bad. It could be that something is bad, but I think that the world doesn't promise us, nor that it offers, that all is going to be effortless. I don't think anything is effortless. I think that we keep getting surprised by things. We've got to figure it out and move forward. So I don't know if it's all negative. Like having to go, you know, from no schooling to suddenly go to school, and then go to college, and then, you know, go into relationships, and then, you know, break up, and then go to another one. These are just part of life. But we learn from each one of them. Every time we get a heartbreak, we learn from it. But I don't know if anybody's ever not had a heartbreak. So when I say, you know, is it something that it only happens to some people and it's bad, and there are human beings on the face of the earth that just smoothly, you know, from the minute they were born, everything went well? I don't think so. I think that a lot of times, even things that we think they're well and we're moving forward, they're going to create stress. And we build resiliency even around stress, even from good stuff. So that's why I don't call it only shows up from a negativity. But it does show up with challenging issues, with being challenged.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for that. I feel like it really opens up sort of the definition of what resilience is and what it can be as well. And today we're talking about pro-social acts. So I'd love if you could talk to us about what pro-social acts are.
Well, I think pro-social, when we're talking, just taking the word pro-social, gives me the concept of a thought process an emotional process and a behavioral process that is an all-encompassing that works for the benefit of all. Mm-hmm. Because we're saying it's a pro-social, right? So if there's human beings and animals and, you know, nature, all that it's intertwined with each other in order to live on this earth and give to each other in order to live. If the thought and the emotion and the behavior is toward something that benefits everybody in the long term, whether it's in short term or long term, obviously that behavior allows the society to move in a better way, in a healthier way. And the more that we could bring the society in a healthier way across the globe, obviously it turns around, it boomerangs around, and it just feeds itself to the betterment. The same way, you know, if there's a disease, it kills us. And when you do behaviors that promote the health, whether it's mental health or physical health, it's going to promote the whole society moving higher and better, in a sense.
Yeah, and how would someone put themselves in a position where they can, you know, contribute some pro-social acts to the betterment of society?
I think the first part is internally to work on themselves so that they get their dualities in line. And to hold an intention, first of all, internally, to hold an intention that they will behave in a way that is benefit. So it first starts from here. The source starts from here and your intentionality. And coming up with your open heart, you know, so that's the first concept of it. So I would say like loving kindness itself. By itself is the pro-social act, because the kindness means that I will accept you as who you are. I will care for you, you know, in any format. And I will bring my best to you. And that's what kindness means. So if I first do that with my own body and my psyche, right? Like if I can be kind first to me and heal myself and my nasty to myself, if I don't do something, or if I make a mistake, or if I fall into a challenge, am I kind to my body? You know, do I put stuff in my body that are against, you know, my health? And the more that I take care of me, I can be a better citizen across the world, right? I don't suck the medical industry. I don't suck any of them. I actually promote it if I'm healthy. The next one would be, you know, in my relatedness to people who are around me, whether they're my parents or my mates or my children, my friends. So that kindness first starts from here and then glows to the next circle that are around me, that I'm impacting them fully. And if I'm kind to the people who are around me, if I have 10 people around me and I'm kind to them and they're kind to the next, this thing kind of, again, boomerangs. It just moves forward. And then go into people maybe that I know, but they're not in my close unit. And then even people who I don't know. I remember Joanna, I was working with a colleague, and we decided in our lunchtime to go walk. And as we were walking and sharing, I watched her, and she would come to the middle of the road and take like a nail and come back to the sidewalk and put it somewhere, or hold it sometimes, or if it was too large, she would put it somewhere that it wouldn't bother anybody. And I kept watching her, and I'm like, that's interesting that you have such a good eye that you're watching for things that might harm someone who's driving. And she just smiled at me. She says, it's effortless for me. But if I can come to this world and just by looking, in an instant, you know, do something, do a kind act that someone who is in their car are not going to see this little nail on the road, but it's going to affect their tire. It's going to affect them, and it's going to cause accidents or discomfort somehow. But if I'm seeing it and ignoring it, then it doesn't make sense. Mm. So I'm a responsible citizen. And that meant so much to me. And I looked at myself like, do I do that? Like, am I holding myself a responsible citizen? Just do kind acts without necessarily having, you know, somebody say, thank you, Fushan. You know, I saw that. But it's a random people, but not because I want something to come back, but because, you know, it's necessary. Or even if it's not necessary, it's something that I can do to either support somebody I don't know, because it's just the right thing to do. And I wish that somebody would do it for me, right? Like, if there was a nail on the road, I wish somebody would have seen it and took it away. So it's that kind of a kindness that starts from an attitude here first and then shows up in the community and just moves forward.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like a lot of us do have those moments where, you know, for example, we're walking on the street and we see something that might not look right, but we still decide to keep walking because we don't think we have the power to change that or, you know, move that nail, for example. And a lot of us do. We can do that because I feel like if we're seeing something that can be changed, that we should take that opportunity. But I also feel like a lot of that starts from within and the work you've done on yourself to be able to see that as an opportunity. And while you were talking about like this before, I was thinking about how on a plane, they tell you to put the mask on yourself and then to help others. That's because you can't be of any service to anyone else if you aren't taking care of yourself.
Absolutely. I know for me, when I'm in pain or my body is in pain, I just don't care about anything else. All of my ideas, every angle of me just comes to take care of me.
Yeah.
So when I take care of myself so I'm healthy, then I'm actually open to be able to take care of others. But yeah. If I'm not taking care of myself, the whole energy gets sucked in. I'm not capable of doing anything else. That's why I said the act of kindness, it really starts with us and then goes layer by layer to the society that's around us.
Yeah, definitely. And I'd love to talk about, you know, some examples of pro-social behavior. And so we've talked about, you know, the example with your friend, but are there any other ones that have been sort of scientifically proven to enhance our resilience?
Well, I think that the act of kindness consistently has been proven scientifically, and it can show up in different versions of things, right? So, for example, there's been a lot of studies that have been done when you bring the young, the kindergarten group, or even like daycare children, daycare age children, preschool age children, to the places that are elderly, are they? And then you bring animals in there and you bring this concept of joy and wisdom together as it collaborates. And there's been a lot of research on how that created longevity for the elderly. They didn't feel useless. You know, so a lot of times when people get older and they're not at their career, they've raised their children, you know, and they're not necessarily out there in the community creating stuff. They feel like I'm useless here. Like, what's the point? What am I going to do? And they've seen so much in the research that when you bring, people together from that angle, and not only they get to remember what a joy of life is because they're working with children, but they begin working with children as if they're doing something and they're giving back something, they're giving back their wisdom, and that becomes the part of the kindness that goes into their heart, and they remember who they are, and from there they give their wisdom and their love to the children. And for the children, it created a more of like a safety concept for them. We also see when, for example, people do act of altruism and they come in and support others, whether they feed the hunger or they work with an organization that reduces trauma or saves, whether it saves the children or saves, you know, people who are been abducted, or anything that is close to somebody's heart, or even somebody who is ill. All of that has shown in research that boosts their serotonin and dopamine, and it just really, really creates a life of purpose and meaning for people when they go beyond themselves. And it's not just a self-centered act, but it's more of the other-centered act with boundaries, obviously, and you have to take care of yourself in order to be able to do that and not lose yourself in that, because then you get burnt out and, you know, the kindle of love is no longer there. It becomes more like an obligatory concept. But when you source it from here, but look at it out there, like you create the results out there, it creates more of a purpose for you that move forward. So there's a lot of generosity and acts that could happen. You could go to tell people who are in your life how much you appreciate them, how much, you know, the greatness that you see them. That could be personal. It can go and, you know, with agencies and offer, you know, help to homeless. Because if it's a, you know, for addiction purposes, you could go and do volunteer work in all of the addiction recovery places, in hospitals with children or cancer patients. Or there's so much that you could, anything that feels right to you. Maybe some people have an experience themselves and they've passed through, you know, people who've had cancer and they've been healed, they go and want to help others. People who have gone through sexual abuse as a child, they've grown up and the resiliency have worked for them. They have an understanding. So they want to give to the other people who maybe are in that place. People who've gone through loss, they want to do that for others. And I think that's what the act of kindness does, is teaches others who are still going through something about the hope that is in the future and also the pathway toward it. Because the way you've walked through this path, maybe you can share with somebody else and they can, maybe they can choose that path or inspires them to choose another path, but know that there are ways of becoming whole and healthy.
Yeah, and I really like this idea of, if you're looking, you know, to find extra meaning in your life, you can engage in like these pro-social acts as a way of doing that. And I feel like that in itself is resilience, because you're looking for ways to be better and looking for ways you can contribute more, not only to yourself, but also to society as well.
Very much, very much. And it has shown, most of the research has shown in positive psychology, in one of the latest studies that were done in Harvard, it was a 100-year study that they did, which showed how, what makes people fulfilled and happy. And they saw amazing relationships, and the ones that in their years, they had the opportunity to support others and go beyond themselves and, you know, hold the kind of altruism, were more fulfilled than other people who were more just engrossed kind of about, what do I want? How do I get what I want and move forward? So there's been a lot of scientific data around this. Most of the data around positive psychology is around gratitude.
Yeah, and I was just wondering what strategies individuals can employ to integrate more of these like pro-social behaviors into their daily lives, because as we've talked about, there are so many benefits, you know, to doing this, not only for others, but also to ourselves.
Well, one of the ways that maybe even, you know, as you go along in the morning, outside, sometimes you could choose, if you have financial capacity, sometimes it's like, you know, get coffee for somebody else, you know, in the morning. If you're getting coffee for yourself, do it for somebody else. Sometimes you could do something for somebody you know. Sometimes you could do just something for somebody you don't know, and just sell a random person on the street. I remember at one point we were going to a concert, and we were driving to the parking, and this person in front of us, you know, left. And as we came to pay, the guy said, "The ones in front of you paid for you." And we said, "We don't know them." They said, "I don't know. They just decided they wanted to pay for you." And then we said, "Okay, then we'll pay for the one behind us." I mean, you know, sometimes an act of random kindness, it just inspires people. you know, like this person just inspired us. And we're like, oh, thank you. That is so amazingly sweet. Then let us do it for somebody else. And you felt good.
Yeah.
And it's the feeling that just got versus they paid for themselves and we could have paid for ourselves. We still let go of $20, right? So the $20 giving was still the $20 that went out of our pocket. But the concept of somebody doing this for us and we could do it for somebody else added the value of joy.
Yeah.
Right? So you could just do these little things that you could do. Like I remember at one point in the United States, Thanksgiving, you know, they offer turkey and they go. So we got something like 15 turkeys and, you know, we cooked them and you know, we wrapped them individually and all of that. And then we went to offer to the people who were on the street. And they were like, I don't know, I don't want them to take this. And we're like, why? We're giving offering. How come this is, they're not taking it? Well, we noticed afterward, which is like, they weren't trusting, like they didn't know who we are, you know, they were afraid, maybe we wanted to harm them. And it was like, okay, well, I wanted to do our act of random kindness, but that wasn't the path because it wasn't being useful. So the next year we decided, okay, we were going to go and help and support, not only give money, but also go and help the agencies that were helping the homeless because the homeless were trusting that agency. So sometimes you do want to do the act of kindness, but then in experience, you'll see, oh, whoops, that didn't work. It's okay. You know, shift your strategy, do it in a way that works.
Yeah. So don't just give up at the first moment it doesn't work because there's always a way around it.
Yes. And that the act of altruism, remember, it's not for other people. It's to create joy for yourself too. So it's allowing the kindness that goes out to also give you the joy. What acts of kindness does, Joanna, is that it allows us to feel connected, feel trusted in a world that we live in. So each one of us can create that kind of a connection and a trust. You can watch the news and every day go in full paranoia. There's, you know, all these conspiracies that the world are doing this and that. There's war everywhere. And, you know, all the local news shows that there's so many thieves and robbers and this and that. And you can live in that world that we're separated, we're going to be harmed. And that I'm not saying that that part is also accurate. But in order to live in a world that we can also live together safely, I got to contribute to that piece.
Yeah.
Purposely.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like there's an extent of resilience required in order to, you know, do these pro-social acts. Like you said, the first time you might try to do an act of kindness, it might not work out in the way you think it would. And quitting would not be a sign of resilience. And I feel like persevering and figuring out the best way that you can contribute is you know, the best, you know, sign of resilience.
And more than anything, what do I have control over and what I don't? What can I do in my capacity with, you know, the resources that I have? Maybe I have a physical resource, another person doesn't. Maybe I have a financial resource, another person doesn't. Maybe I have a social resource. I know people who can do things. So coming to terms with what do I have in my bag, in my tool, and my resources that are around me that I can utilize in order to move ahead and not keep looking at the area I don't have control over. I don't. But I can come back to looking at what are my strengths and what do I have here that can move forward. And that becomes part of the resiliency itself.
Yeah, certainly. And moving to like the idea of relationships and how they fit into all of this in the context of interpersonal relationships, how do pro-social behaviors contribute to, you know, the development of more resilient, you know, relationships?
We feel stronger when we know that we have a community behind us. we always hear it, like, if you know, one person might not be able to do something, but when it's 2 and 3 and 10 people, you get the courage to move forward and do the things you need to do. The type of support that we can get from people around us makes us more resilient toward whatever it is that we could have. So the bond that we create through kindness, through creating trust, through honesty, transparency, you know, sharing things together, sharing resources together, you see that there's a power that becomes not just one person, but 2, 3, 4, and all of this group feel better. Like when we're grieving, if it's just one person grieving, it really is harder. Why in societies that they all grieve together, that the process of grieving goes smoother? They might cry together. They might take 40 days and all of them come together and cry together. But then it's release. They all feel like we're together. When you know, when is the California has earthquakes. And I was in one of them, you know, which was like, you know, close to 7 degrees. And it was really, really hard. The whole place looked like a war zone at one point. And you could see when people got together and they were, you know, our neighbors, where we knew each other, and you offer things together. And that it created trust and a bond that you could figure, okay, together we could handle it. We could go through all of this together. You know, when people are, you know, when you look at war, and now there's, you know, a couple of wars across the world, and you can work with those people and look at them and see that when they had a community together, they post-traumatic stress went and became post-growth. You know, I work with refugees who are in camp. They left countries that they had to, and they've gone through so much trauma to finally get to a camp where from there they can go out. When I've interviewed and worked with people who were just one, the amount of trauma and the fear and, you know, all of that was so much more than when you saw a community or a family came together. Because when together in that societal bond that they had and the trust that they have together, you could see even in the middle of shelters, one would wake up and hold the security for the other ones. And then one would sleep and then the other one. So in between them, they were holding the power, and each one of them was becoming more resilient than the one person who didn't have any social support from anybody else. They couldn't even sleep. They had to sleep with one eye open because at any point they thought they were going to get harmed. So you could see this level of togetherness, how much it creates that power and resiliency in you upholding and moving along. And when you as a community can move along, then that's where a lot of the social movements happen. You know, social movements doesn't happen one-on-one. It happens when people get together. Like, remember the Me Too movement. Like, remember all of these movements, the women's movement, any of these movements you looked at, these people one by one were there and holding shame and secrecy and all of it internally. The minute that they started sharing and coming together and trusting each other, suddenly the power showed up. And that within that power is where you take your own power and own it and then kind of like change, like a tipping point, change the society toward taking care of itself, being better, you know, holding a higher moral value for all of us across the globe.
Yeah, definitely. And what they say is true, you know, stronger together. And I feel like that really like rang true in what you just talked about as well. Yeah, and I'd love to talk more about practices that you would personally recommend to cultivate pro-social behavior. So now we're moving into our practices and habits section. So is there a practice that you might specifically recommend in order to do that?
Of course. A lot of the work with the awareness integration, as the name states, is awareness. So this is one talent, let's say, or a skill that we do have as human being beyond other species, which we can be aware of ourselves, aware of our thoughts and emotions and behavior. Like you could go like a camera, look at yourself and shift, you know, that you can shift your thought process, you can shift your behavior if you chose to, which most animals can't really do that, I mean, consciously, but we can. So I think having to train this ability in us is very, very important. So looking at what is it consciously that I hold value, and based on that value, what do I how am I intentional during the day? Like you could do a, you know, a 5-minute meditation, open eye, closed eye, however you like. And part of that meditation is like, who do I intend to be today? You know, what kind of thought processes do I choose to have and uphold? What kind of emotions do I want to foster? Because emotions come and go. You can choose to hang out in some or leave, you know, shift your emotion to something else. You know, some things will get us angry. Do you want to hang in the anger and brew it and brew it because of the way you're thinking? Or you could acknowledge that you're angry and, you know, do what you need to do, get the message from it, and then shift your mood and move on to another feeling because you change your, you know, thought process of it and handle what it needs to be handled. So what kind of emotions do I engage in and I want to foster? Like, I know when I get angry, I damage myself more than anything because I'm so consumed in it. I even physically and spatially, I lose my awareness. And sometimes I, you know, hit myself in places and I'm like, getting bruised. I'm like, what did happen to me? Well, I was so consumed in my anger and in my head, I wasn't even aware of, you know, things that were happening. And then I, you know, screw up my relationships because I'm angry and growling and say something to someone, which I really didn't mean to say it in that way. So I, at one point in life, I decided, I hear you, anger. I'm just not going to dwell in you. Like the minute you show up, I'm like, gotcha. What's the message? What do you want to share with me? Thank you for what you're trying to share with me. And, you know, I don't need to hold on to the energy of it anymore. I shift into calmness and, you know, coming to the love, and I really like hanging out. That just feels so much more comfortable. I just want to hang out in that place. So it's like, what kind of emotions I want to hang out? What kind of behaviors do you want to say? You know, sometimes I hear my voice, you know, and judging people. And then at one point I say, Fujian, if you don't have anything nice to say, stop it. Like, even if you need to criticize someone, can you say it with high level of respect? And if you're hearing yourself say things nasty in your head, it's like, stop. So what kind of behavior do I want to, I'm committed to do? So this way, you are holding yourself in a value system that you say, I want. Like you ask me the question, who's your role model? Every morning, who's my role model? Who do I intend to be? And what is it that I would say that I, you know, at the end of the day, if I turn around, I could say like, yes, I did this. And that, what are some of those behaviors that I say if happens that I would have remorse? Well, intentionally right now, what would I do so I won't have remorse? And if we do stuff that we do have remorse, it's okay. It's all right. Just clean it up, you know, apologize. Go to the person, say, I made a mess. I'm sorry. You know, whatever it is that you need to do to clean it up. So being intentional, just in the morning, sit down, write down, this is who I intend to be. These are the things I'm going to do. These are the things I want, you know, in order, and go back to look at the different relationships you have. At work, this is who I intend to be today. With my relationship with my mate, this is who I intend to be today. So look at the different areas of your life and, you know, become conscious about what you do and how you're going to do.
Yeah. And do you find that you come across any challenges during this process?
Absolutely. Because there's innate process inside of me that also wants to be selfish and, you know, holds the ground of, you know, we're about me and all of those show up. And that's fine. That's just being human. And, you know, you listen to the other parts of you and what is it that they want? And is there any way of collaborating together and negotiating between the parts of you? And as long as something is inside of you on a thought and an emotion, you're responsible internally. The moment it turns into a behavior out there, now you have an impact that you're going to be responsible to others also. So I prefer that internally to try to come to get aligned with my values before the behavior happens. So you get a filter, you know, challenge yourself here, and then so that your behavior is aligned with your values and what you intend. But again, you know, and if you're handling multi projects at the same time, you might not be aware and not intentional every single minute, and automatically you might do stuff, and then you could go back and look at it and say, not proud of that, and got it, this is what happened, and I intend to do it another way.
Yeah.
And I think we learned from those. I think that's where resiliency also shows. We learn when we're conscious of ourselves, and we don't justify or create excuses for ourselves, but we actually acknowledge, yes, I was responsible for this, or I intended it this way, and I did it another way.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like what's really important is acknowledging sort of mistakes or things that you've done as an opportunity to grow and also learn from those, because that's also part of resilience. Because I feel like if we choose to sit in, for example, a feeling of regret or anger or sadness or, you know, something negative because of what has happened, and we don't choose to use that as an opportunity to learn from it or learn from a mistake, then we're also not putting ourselves in the best possible position in order to contribute better to society, to be able to do those pro-social acts, to be able to better ourselves as well.
Very much. And I think that sometimes when, you know, in courses or classes or in therapy, or, you know, when we talked about, you know, see what your value is and act on it, people get intimidated as if, like, I can't be perfect. That's just being perfect. Like, no, it's just being realistic. I don't want you to be perfect. I just want you to be realistic about saying what it is you want and then acting on it. Like, if you're going to say, I intend to be kind, doesn't mean you're going to be kind all day. It just means that you're going to intend to be kind most of the time. And if there are times you're not kind, you'll watch yourself and see, oh, what was the situation right now that I'm not kind? And then you need to attend to that, right? So it's opportunity for you to grow and see the different parts of yourself. And it's funny because you could be walking in life automatically and never noticing these things. But it's funny that the minute you intend something, then all the times that you're out of integrity shows up, so that you know how you're out of integrity. I don't know if you guys have ever tried to play this game. I'm going to be honest fully today. And then every time that I'm not honest shows up right in front of my face. And all the ways that are opportunity for me not to be honest, it shows up into my face, right? Like, you go somewhere and you've worked so hard to create this beautiful party for you, and the food sucks. And they're like, well, how was it? Well, it's an opportunity for me to be honest, and you don't like it. But I don't want to. I don't want to hurt that person. So, you know, I'm just going to say, it's beautiful. Thank you so much, right? So it's funny, like, how many opportunities suddenly you see in front of you that the other part, you know, the gremlin parts of you comes up and smiles and laughs at you and says, ha, 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 you wanted to be on integrity. I'll show you all the ways you're not. But again, all these are the times we grow.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like when we're pushing ourselves a bit more are definitely the times where we grow. And when we're sitting in comfort, it's when we're sort of allowing ourselves to be like, oh yeah, it's okay if I'm not honest, even though I would rather be honest in this moment, but being dishonest is more comfortable. Yeah, definitely.
And then I see all of this under the umbrella of resilience, because the more that you are aware of all parts of you, your vulnerabilities, your shadow sides, your dark sides, your selfish signs. The more you're aware of those, and the more you're aware of your strengths and having the ability to shift, the ability to move, to do all of that, that's the awareness of all of it makes you more resilient versus I don't even think you're going to be as resilient if you just focused on your power and strength and you didn't look at your vulnerabilities, because they're going to creep up, right? They're going to kind of come in and then you'll be surprised, versus more and more just becoming aware of all of it, but then choosing your strengths and moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm so glad that we've touched on that as well, because I feel like that's also a really important part of developing resilience, you know, also having that mindfulness about yourself and your actions and the way you go about things, because it really takes a lot to step back and be like, okay, you know, for example, I'm not the most honest person. Let me challenge myself to be more honest. But in order to get to that point, it requires a lot of mindfulness and, you know, actually getting to a point where you can look at yourself and see those parts about yourself, which I feel like is very challenging. Not a lot of people are in a position to do that or have the resources in order to have that sort of introspection.
Yes. And that's why we created not only the model, but the app, because you have the ability in 30 areas of your life to go through and kind of train yourself in looking at all of these relationships that you have, and how do you think? How do you feel? How do you act, positively and negatively? And what are the results? What are the impacts? You know, when you think positive, when you feel positive, when you act positive, what's the impact in your life? What's the result in these relationships? And when you behave negatively, when you think negatively, have negative, you know, brew negative emotions, what kind of impact does that have in your life? You know, what is the impact of your assumptions that you consistently have about people and how they think of you and feel about you? How do you think of yourself, you know, when you're around people or, you know, in your relationships, each one of them? Do you hold yourself up high? Do you scold yourself? Do you punish yourself? So it gives you, you can get the tool of consistently having that monitoring of self become kind of, you know, as part of the skills you have automatically, because we all as human beings just automatize everything, right? Most of our automatic thinking are, you know, we built it one day and then we send it into automation and now it comes in every day. Yeah. So now we want to also build the cameras, the observing cameras, as something that becomes at one point automated for you, which is the camera is watching you. Your camera is watching you. A camera inside watching your thoughts and feelings, and a camera outside watching your behavior and how you're creating impact out there. And these two, as we install them in ourselves, allows us to be accountable daily, accountable every minute. And being accountable and responsible for that then allows me to steer, you know, my intention where I need it to be, versus, you know, feeling being a victim of my own life, victim of the world, you know. And part of that resiliency is that you're not being a victim of the world, right? You're being a proactive person in your life, and you do things, you take on, and you try to get yourself out instead of I'm a victim and all of that. So I think the accountability is something that is the cornerstone of the model, and it gives you strength in order to again handle the things you have in control of you, and you know, kind of let go of the things that is not. Just watch them and see how you could, you know, cooperate with the world that it might not always be your. But at least do the things you can do intentionally in a way that is pro-social to the world, that is to the benefit of all.
Yeah, 100%. And I definitely agree with everything that you've said about that. So thank you so much for sharing all of that with us. This brings us now to our last section for today, which is our open mic. So I'd love to hand it over to you to talk about anything that you would like to.
I think we're responsible, every human being on the face of the earth, we're responsible for a couple of things. We are responsible for our health and keeping ourselves healthy. We're responsible for growing. We're responsible for learning. And we're responsible to take care of ourselves and people around us and the community around us and, you know, the habitat around us. And more than anything, we're responsible for our moods, for our happiness, you know? So I hope that whomever is listening to us, that they become responsible for who they are and take their responsibility greatly and take care of themselves. Because I think that, again, if we take care of ourselves, the domino effect of how we take care of our world just goes higher and higher. And our world needs to be taken care of. So I think that we could choose to be a part of the society that is the movers and the shakers and, you know, the proactive ones. Or we could be a part of the society that allows the world to make decisions and move, and our world even, you know, around us, just to do whatever it does to us. Usually when we take some responsibility and act upon that, we're happier, we're more fulfilled. And I think everybody deserves to live a fulfilled life. Like, you have only one, you know, you show up in this life once. Even for people who think they have other lives, at least this life, you only show up once.
Yeah.
So it's like, let's make the best of it. And regardless of all the traumas that could have happened to us or did happen to us, we can create a fulfilled life for ourselves. So I urge everyone to take on that responsibility, take it on and take care of themselves.
Perfect. And I don't think we could have ended today off on a better note. So I'd love to leave things there because I feel like that's just the perfect way to end today and the perfect message for people, you know, as a message of hope and also just a bit of encouragement that you really can, you know, be a part of the world in a fulfilling way and also be a part of yourself in a fulfilling way as well. So thank you, Dr. Fujian, for sharing all of this with us and sharing your insight and not only how we can be better for ourselves, but also how we can be better for the world around us.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, for a conversation, and I hope that people take it to heart.
I'm sure they will. And for everyone watching who might want to reach out to you or find out more about you, where can we go?
FujianZain.com to know about me. They can go to awarenessintegration.com to know about the theory and go to Fujian.com for the app. So you knew those are okay.
Amazing. Well, we've also got Dr. Fujian's details down in the description below, but thank you so much for tuning in and we'll see you all next time.
You have been listening to Bouncing Back, the Personal Resilience Science Insights podcast produced by the Life Management Science Labs. Listen to episodes from LMSL's 10 Life Management Perspectives on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or other podcasting apps on your smartphone. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating our show, sharing it, and subscribing to our channel, as it helps other people find it and us grow to bring you more quality resources. More of our work can be found on our website, pr.lmsl.net, where you can join our movement. I'm Joanna. Thanks for tuning in.